That's great. Thank you, Commissioner Fish.
Here.
Okay, let's begin with communications items and move on from there.
Item 1053, request of Mary Eng to address council regarding things she cares about.
Mary, you're here this morning? Okay, then let's move on to the next one and see if she comes in.
1054, request of Benjamin Pickering to address council regarding negative of abuse and time to make time.
Benjamin? Okay, same thing goes there.
1055, request of Jeremy Solomon to address council regarding Water Bureau's sale of the Freeman facility.
Good morning. Come on up.
Hi, is it possible to stand? Or
you whatever you'd like.
Okay, thank you very much.
Stand or seated, fine.
And I've got this down to about 3 minutes and 30 seconds, so I'm going to go fast.
All right.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. My name is Jeremy Solomon. For years, residents have hoped that the Freeman Water Bureau property in Multnomah Village would become a park. In September, the neighborhood was stunned to learn that the Water Bureau had agreed to sell Freeman. There had been no for sale sign, no ad in the Oregonian, no MLS listing. A group of residents contacted the city trying to find out how this happened. Here's what we know. In 2010, City Council passed an ordinance stating that the Water Bureau offered to sell 8 surplus properties to other bureaus, but, quote, there was no interest in purchasing the properties. In that ordinance, the City Council voted that the, quote, public interest would be best served by selling each property at the fair market value on the open market for the best price, terms, and conditions, unquote. Almost 2 years later, in March 2012, the Water Bureau posted a cryptic ad on Craigslist offering, quote, a tank site for sale, unquote, asking $187,000. 6 months later, in September 2012, the Water Bureau signed an agreement to sell Freeman for $140,000. PortlandMaps.com valued Freeman in 2012 at $416,630. And an independent analysis, a big one, of comps sold within a 6-block radius within 6 months of September 2012 conservatively assessed their value. We took out outliers of between $600,000 on the low end and $1.4 million on the high end. After requesting that the city halt this virtual giveaway of public land, the city attorney said that the Water Bureau, quote, followed all relevant policies and the sale of Freeman must go forward. We respectfully disagree. Research suggests that in 1964, Freeman may have originally been purchased with taxpayer money, not ratepayer money. Thus, it should have been offered to city bureaus at book value, which, prorated and inflation-adjusted, would have been just $19.41. We believe the Parks Bureau would have purchased it for this price had they been offered the property at its book value. Furthermore, Oregon Statute 221.727 requires that the city sell real property under, quote, a single program established within the city for the sale of that class of properties, unquote. The city has provided, and we've done a public records request, no documentation or evidence to show that it established any type of program, and without such a documented program in place, the proposed Freeman sale could only be executed according to the alternative, which is Oregon Statute 221.725, and that requires extensive prior public notification, I'm almost done, which the city clearly did not follow.
Mayor,
finally,
Mayor, can he have an extra?
Yes, please. No, go ahead.
I've got 30 seconds here.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Nick. Today, we are submitting a letter on behalf of hundreds of concerned Portlanders, and I'm not exaggerating, who have joined our group. This letter is signed by Moses Ross, chair of the Multnomah Neighborhood Association, John Prouty, president of the Crestwood Neighborhood Association, Dean Smith, chair of the Ash Creek Neighborhood Association, Jesse Johnson, chair of Friends of Wood Park, and myself, requesting that the city immediately rescind, stop this deeply flawed sale. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you for coming. Okay.
So, Mayor, I just want to thank Mr. Solomon for testifying today. And
thank
we've had
you,
an, we've
Nick.
had as he knows, as the new commissioner in charge, we've had some exchanges of correspondence. And I don't want to take up the time now to discuss the specific issues, because there are some reasonable people can disagree about some of the things in dispute. But what I do agree with is that the public notification process that was in effect as of 2008 was inadequate. And one of the things that I want the neighborhood to know and my colleagues to know is that the Water Bureau is in the process of developing a new set of guidelines which will require and mandate in the sale of any property that the Water Bureau has declared surplus, notification to the affected community, posting at the site, and some other safeguards. We'll be discussing those with the neighbors to make sure that they're robust enough.
Right.
We've certainly learned some lessons from this, and I appreciate the time and care you've taken to bring that to our attention.
Thank you. Now, on behalf of the hundreds of people who've gotten me here and the nature there, I say that that policy start now, because if Freeman goes forward, it will violate the state statute. It will not be in conjunction with the Oregon statute, which says there has to be a policy, a plan, program, and there isn't any. This is ad hoc. This violates state law.
So you have a lawyer, and we're going to review all the legal arguments that you've made.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your advocacy.
Great.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next one, please.
1056, request of Michael Krupp to address council regarding his 2 cents worth.
Morning.
I told you that a brighter future as a cartoon awaited you, but it was as Goonie, a flip-flop and a rubber, and his toothless 3-day dog, the Oregonian, I had envisioned you. As you personify the archetype of your cabal, Satan's sock puppets, we the people are marionettes of God. Our levitating strings relentlessly cut asunder and tied into Androclean knots by the patriarchal lower key. War, death, gravity, money, politics, and media. Our personal relationship, which smacks of a marriage arranged by demons, is a sad fact. Though bound in unholy matrimony, we must work together. I suggest we work on a twofold strategy to raise the esteem of your bureau, the police, and begin to expose the foul media wizard of lies, the dog behind the curtain, to slowly shut the spigot of spew that slobbers down on us daily, the 6 lead stories by the 6 remaining outlets who speak for the big 6 energy corporations. 666. It makes me sick. First, let's make it clear that the agenda of the police bureau is dictated by you, apparently by and out of your seat. These policies are the dark demands of property issued to you, their boy in City Hall behind closed doors. They reflect disdain and intolerance of the people, the 99%. Therefore, the actions of the police are solely the demands of the soulless 1%. The police act as a body. You are their head. The individual officers do not choose which orders to follow. Though with your head pickled in a jar of money mash, it can appear as headless horsemen who protect us. To bring the media community monologue up to present, let's occupy the 21st century. Are you willing to let the vague feelings of hate and fear of the police continue to be stirred up by the press that holes up in your lobby? Albeit only 3 days a week, some people take them seriously. It is really you and the dirty fox dozen that should inspire our loathing, not the police bureau. The very few truly egregious actions of a minuscule number of officers, though worthy of scrutiny, do not define our police. Can anyone really believe that out of thousands of doctors, there aren't a few scoundrels, of judges, of mayors? Any group of this size has the certainty of bad apples. The work of the police is critical and highly visible. The ease with which the lying dogs of media mislead, exaggerate, omit, and twist facts leaves the public ill at ease and sometimes hate-filled. For the 1% in their cyclopean media, the better to pick our bones and sell us sausage. Among your many duties and unholy predilections as mayor is commissioner of the police bureau. Though not perfect, they are the very best one in the country, a fact that no doubt will surprise you. Fate leaves us with you as their leader, a position achieved neither through experience or merit. In today's comic section, we see you as Little Lord Fauntleroy in his Cub Scout knickers saluting his box of toy soldiers, late to sup at the City Club.
Thanks.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I just have to note that I once saw Satan sock puppets open for Nirvana at the Meadowlands in New Jersey, and they were awesome.
I knew you would have. All right, next one, please.
Item 1057, request of Cedric J. Wilkins to address council regarding solo power, money, and no covered reservoirs.
Wilkins? Okay, not here. And then have Mary or Benjamin arrived? Okay, so let's move on to consent calendar. We have, I think, one request to pull an item from consent calendar, right? Number 1072?
Correct.
Any other requests? So let's take a vote on the balance of the consent calendar, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And we'll, yes.
Can I just clarify who pulled 1072?
That was Mr. Sean Darcy.
Right. So, and that, by tradition, goes to the end of our agenda, so you know, in terms of timing.
We'll have to cover everything else first, but bear with us. Okay, time certain, 1058.
Adopt the fiscal year 2013-14 fall supplemental budget and make other budget-related changes.
So Andrew and his team are here to present this. Just want to make a couple of remarks at the outset. Mentioned this in informal session, but want to mention here as well. We are in a better place as a city with this surplus that we are now about to allocate and put before the council this morning. That's because this city council did careful and difficult work on one of the most difficult budgets that the city's ever faced earlier this year, and because our bureau managers responded to a call from me as their mayor and from all of us as their commissioners in charge to hold down on expenses during the second part of last fiscal year. That helped produce a rather substantial surplus, a one-time surplus that's now before the council. And I want to thank and praise the excellent public administrators that run our bureaus for having managed our money well under difficult circumstances. That literally is paying dividends to the citizens of our city today. And the proposal before us will put the city in an even stronger position, since the majority of the money on the table is proposed to be allocated to paying off debt, thus raising the balance of our general fund for every year hereafter. So I just want to thank and commend the good work that's been done by our budget staff and by our bureau managers in following the council's direction in navigating some very choppy waters over the course of this year. So with that, I'll turn it over to Andrew Scott to take it from there.
Thank you, Mayor. So I'm going to go through the fall supplemental budget this morning, and there are a number of different pieces and items moving, so I'll try and sort of quickly go through. Feel free to ask questions as we go, and then I think there will be, well, I know there will be time after that then for amendments, which I know at least have a couple that we'll be bringing forward. So I'm going to start with the general fund, as we often do in the city budget. The fall supplemental budget increases the general fund by almost $21 million. Almost all of that comes from additional beginning fund balance, and that beginning fund balance, again, is about $20 million higher. However, the excess beginning fund balance is about $14 million. The difference between those numbers as you go through the bump, after we calculate what the excess balance is, we fund Bureau encumbrance carryovers. These are contracts that bureaus had in place at the end of the year that are carried over into the new year. We fund advances, which is an accounting issue in terms of whether funds were advanced and expensed out of our system. And then finally, any revenue carryovers, which by city policy, excess revenue brought in by the bureaus can be carried over to the next year. After taking all those into account, again, that left $14.1 million of what we refer to as excess balance. Excess balance under city policy, at least 25% of it needs to be allocated to infrastructure maintenance and replacement projects. This fall bump includes just over $4.5 million for capital projects, which exceeds that minimum required in policy. Of that $4.5 million, the bulk of it, $3.2 million, is to pay off the parks line of credit. That parks line of credit is currently being used for capital projects in parks. Buying down that line of credit will save about $530,000 in interest over the life of the loan,
and it'll free up roughly $370,000 annually in parks budget for infrastructure and maintenance spending in future years. An additional $230,000 of capital funding is being allocated to the Jasmine Block streetcar alignment, realignment. And finally, there's about $1.1 million of other capital projects, the bulk of which, $834,000, is going for police car video cameras. After spending, again, a minimum of 25%, again, we're exceeding that in this supplemental budget, the remaining $9.6 million is being set aside for the 14-15 budget process per city financial policy. Of that $9.6 million, council in this action is setting aside $8.1 million to pay off the remaining debt for the City Hall building and the computer-aided dispatch system. And again, using those one-time resources, as the mayor mentioned, for those remaining debt payments will free up $3.5 million in ongoing resources in 14-15. And then finally, the remainder is being unspent. About $1.5 million is unspent and being carried over for 14-15 budget. The other side of the ledger outside of the excess balance is our unrestricted general fund contingency. Currently, that fund has just under $3.1 million in it, and this supplemental budget will use about $2.3 million for new requests, which would again leave about $740,000 in that contingency fund. The largest of that $2.3 million is $1.7 million for housing programs. Exhibit 4 in the budget, in the supplemental budget that you should have in front of you, which again is this general fund reconciliation sheet, walks through the details, again, that I just covered at a high level. Again, it'll walk through the capital set-aside request, the total of $4.5 million. It refers and walks through the carryover requests from bureaus. Again, these are areas where bureaus had excess revenue that carries over. The encumbrances that you can see there that have been requested and are being approved in this supplemental budget. And then finally, detail on the new requests, both what was requested and what is being funded as part of this supplemental budget, as well as some technical adjustments.
Andrew, because you've talked about paying off some debt and generating ongoing money, and we're going to be talking about the difference between one-time and ongoing, for the benefit of people that are not insiders in our budget process, could you just give us a quick primer for the public's sake?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, one-time resources are those resources that, such as the balance that the mayor referred to from the end of this last fiscal year, about half of that balance was generated from bureaus who underspent their prior year budgets, again, materials and services budget. Some of the rest was reflective of some additional revenues that we had, as well as some lower personnel spending. I think since bureaus knew that they were going to be losing positions, they didn't fill positions as we got to the end of the year, so there was some savings there as well. That's one-time. It's like the money that ends up at in your bank account unexpectedly at the end of the year, or at the end of the month, but maybe you're not necessarily going to get it again in the future. And so we treat that as one-time money, and again, per financial policy, allocated towards one-time projects such as capital projects or carryover for next year. However, some of the factors that contributed to that ending fund balance, such as the additional revenues that we got last year, may in fact come in again in the future. And that's what the city economist does and will do when he releases the forecast in a couple weeks, is sort of look at those and say, okay, actually this will be ongoing revenue, and it's like a pay raise that you get. You know it's going to be there month after month or year after year going forward. That money can be spent on ongoing personnel, programs, et cetera. Just switching a little bit from the general fund request, I want to touch briefly on two other important issues around the general fund in this bump. One has to do with general fund overhead changes, and you can see in the memo we brought forward, we walked through, and there's an exhibit 7 as well, which walks through some of the details. The General Fund Advisory Committee met and has recommended to council for a couple of updates to the general fund overhead model. The first actually change, it's not change to the model, but a change to the process, is that the overhead model be updated throughout the budget process. This is actually a return to what the city used to do before 2005. What that means is that as we go through and make changes to general fund overhead bureaus, so whether those be cuts or adds, we'll be adjusting the amount of overhead we're collecting from the overhead paying bureaus. Again, this is the way the city used to do things. We had some recommended changes in 2005 from a consultant at that time, and we ended up not doing that true-up. It does get trued up at the end of a three-year process, but the advantage of truing it up during the budget process is that it's a little bit more real-time, and it's reflective of the decisions being made. So it will change the way that overhead bureaus, in terms of proposing their budget, and instead of everything being counted as general fund discretionary, we'll be able to show that mix for both cuts and for adds. The other changes that the overhead committee is recommending are changes to how the model is calculated, and these are technical changes in nature, but I do want to point them out because they shift the allocation of overhead costs somewhat in terms of the payers. Three major changes there. When a new fund is added to the model, the metrics for that fund will be rolled back 3 years as though it had been in existence. This helps with our three-year true-up process. Same thing with when a fund goes away, the metrics for the last 3 years will be removed. This will prevent charges being assigned to funds that are no longer in existence, which we've had a problem with in the past. In terms of pass-throughs, you may remember from last budget process, Council asked us to take a look at pass-through funds and how much they're being charged for overhead and whether those were appropriate charges. So again, the overhead committee is recommending that the Children's Investment Fund, Property Management License Fund, Convention and Tourism Fund, the Arts Education and Access Fund, and finally the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission all be charged a flat overhead amount of $25,000 each. This is significantly less than most of them would have been charged under the model, but again, the committee felt like it was fair since these are predominantly pass-through costs that we're handling the funds, so they're in some cases large funds. There's not a lot of city cost involved, though, with those pass-throughs. And finally, vacant regular limited-term double-fill job share and recurring positions will now be included in the model. Again, this was believed to more accurately capture the cost of these positions as we allocate out overhead, as you know, through positions. It does have it does shift costs, though, to the general fund. And again, that's already being accounted for in our forecast moving forward, assuming council makes that change today. Again, we felt this was more reflective of the actual costs. And then finally, the other thing to point out is just current appropriation level changes. Again, we do this in the fall budget supplemental process when there are CalTarget changes. And the change here is going to be for the Parks Bureau. In addition to $590,000 that was already scheduled to be included, additionally included in Parks CalTarget, a further $55,670 is added based on phase one improvements of the South Waterfront Greenway. Again, this is part of the city's longstanding policy around O&M. When council approves a new park or a new asset, frankly, in any bureau, the operations and maintenance costs are automatically included then in a CalTarget. When I say automatic, they still have to be approved by council, which is what we're doing here, the actual amounts. Outside of the general fund, there are a number of non-general fund changes, and they're summarized for you in a table. Excuse me, but nothing significant of note there. I'm happy to take any questions you have on the bump.
Under the update on budget notes, council passed a budget note asking for police and fire bureau to prepare monthly overtime reports, and your report says that, I mean, the fire bureau started that in July of 2013, and we're doing monthly reports, but your report also says the police bureau is providing monthly reports, and I have not seen any I saw one monthly report, but I have not seen any reports from the police bureau.
Okay. Police is preparing those monthly reports, and we may just need to talk about distribution of those.
Yeah, because your budget note says they are being distributed to council. And
you haven't gotten them?
I only received one.
Oh, all right. Let's make sure that they are getting distributed. Chief Krebs is here, so he can make sure that happens. Yeah, I know you're doing the reports, but let's make sure they're going to all the council offices.
Great.
And put out for the public to see. Okay, Joe. Other questions for staff? And then I know before we begin the hearing, we have some amendment proposals, so we'll want to take those up before we take public testimony. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. These have been discussed with council offices. So my first amendment is to add $20,000 for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, $10,000 for Elders in Action, and $10,000 for the Disability Program. The Elders both of these were part of the $300,000 request from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, most of which I think there's concurrence that we can't fund the Neighborhood Grant Program at this time, although it's much beloved, and I know that that's a priority for you in a future budget. The Elders Grant is for updating their website and increasing volunteer capacity, and the disability grant, disability money is for emergency preparedness. So I move that amendment.
Okay, I'm pleased to second that.
Okay. Any further discussion? So let's take a roll call on adding that amendment to the package.
Want to be clear, that was $40,000 total. Is
no,
that right?
$20,000
total. $20,000 total, 10 for elders. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So what council's doing here is putting these amendments on the table, and then we'll take public testimony on both the original package and the amendments that have been proposed and put on the table by motion. So roll call, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for supporting this. It does speak to our equity agenda and providing additional funding for those who most need it. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And my second amendment is to add $55,404 for the Bureau of Development Services to fund the tree coordinator, the tree project coordinator for the second 6 months of this year.
Please to second that.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Very much appreciate the council's commitment to getting the tree project done. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you for bringing this forward, Amanda, and thanks to Hannah Kuhn for all of her yeoman service in working on the tree code. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. That too. Additional amendment proposals?
Mr. Mayor, I have one. And let's see. Where do I give the copies to? Carol? This is a rather technical amendment, which is intended to address the issue of overflowing garbage cans at BOAC. We reduced janitorial service at BOAC at 911, and that has resulted in a less pleasant workplace. And it's a $30,000 item, and it's something that we're going to absorb within BOAC. But it turns out, for highly technical reasons I don't understand, in order to spend that $30,000, we have to increase the interagency between the Bureau of Emergency Communications and the Office of Management and Finance by $30,000 to restore janitorial services and amend Exhibits 1 through 4 as appropriate. The additional cost of this interagency will be absorbed within the existing budget of the Bureau of Emergency Communications. And in order for OMF, although in fact we're absorbing this in the BOAC budget, technically we're authorizing OMF's Facilities Division to provide additional janitorial services. That's this amendment.
Second.
Further discussion? You're looking a little troubled, but
No. I was just going to explain if okay. Council was curious. It's part of the city's double count when we have interagencies back and forth. It is using existing BOAC resources, but they're new resources for OMF. So BOAC's appropriation stays the same. OMF's appropriation goes up by $30,000.
Okay. Roll call.
Novick.
I very much appreciate Council's support of this amendment. In a recent employee survey, the issue of just how clean and livable the facilities are at BOAC came up again and again. So the people very much appreciate this. Aye.
Fritz.
I've been on the operations floor at the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and it's hermetically sealed. There's no windows. There's no air. I can quite believe that that would be a significant challenge. Commissioner Novick, I appreciate you bringing this as an amendment, in part because it shows that there have been some significant impacts to employees and to, as well as to citizens of Portland through the cuts of the past 5 years. And this is just one of the more practical examples. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And any further amendment requests from Council? So the two of these three that actually have a financial impact, because the interagency essentially doesn't, are contingency draws, right?
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And then we have
a technical amendment as well.
Yeah, actually we have two more amendments, yeah. One of
us, walk through those.
Yeah, so one of these is related to the Portland Development Commission, and actually, Carla's passing that out. This is a technical amendment. Again, PDC had an encumbrance carryover of $84,918. As we closed the books, that fund was actually accrued back to last fiscal year, and so we don't want to carry it over because that would be a double count, and PDC is fully on board with this as well. So a very technical amendment just to remove that encumbrance carryover is the first amendment, and then the other one, and I apologize because I think the title on here may have gotten cut and pasted incorrectly.
Yes.
It's amendment number 3. It is not a BOAC interagency with the Office of Management and Finance. It instead has to deal with the planter boxes in front of City Hall, and we're just removing that proposed appropriation increase of $214,000 for the storm planter boxes. Again, that project is being delayed.
So the title doesn't matter, right? Do we need to change the title?
Yeah, I think the again, what you have on the paper is incorrect. I think the amendment, Mayor, you'll need to put forward. The title would be
I would say that just decreased appropriation in the Office of Management and Finance for planter boxes, I think.
Decreased appropriation in OMF for planter boxes.
All right.
Move that amendment.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. Thank you.
And just a clarification, when it says the delayed until when?
Proposed will be proposed in the next fiscal year budget.
Thank you.
Are you asking us to take up amendments 1 and 3 as a package?
Could we? Can we do that as one motion? We'll take Commissioner Salzman's motion and Commissioner Fritz's second as just that, unless there's objection.
I think actually that Amendment 2 was, I frankly didn't realize Andrew was bringing it as forward to this package. I think Amendment 2 was the BOEC issue.
Yes, we've already adopted that. So we're now acting on number 1 and number 3. So we're removing the PDC request for encumbrance carryover, and we're decreasing the appropriation to OMS for the storm planter boxes. Further council discussion and roll call on including those amendments.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, I think that's it for amendments. So that whole package is now in front of the council, and we'll open the public hearing.
What's in there?
Thank you. Anyone signed up to testify?
Yes. We have 4 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Lightning, Liesl Wendt, and Andy Frazier.
Mayor, I believe this is the first time that Commissioner Wendt has appeared before us in her new capacity. So
I think it is.
We should give her a round of applause for her new leadership at the county.
Good morning. And I think we should let her go first, since she's a public official.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. Thanks for having me here today, particularly Commissioner Salzman, for the invitation. I'm here to talk to you about the 1.7 proposed investment in housing. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was, certainly from my former perspective at 211, every winter the need for housing exceeds capacity in this community, and I think we all know that. And I am commending you for considering this proposal at this time of the winter. We often have these conversations in December, January, and February when winter weather makes it a more visible issue. And today you are looking at an investment for this winter in ensuring families and individuals have access to not just shelter, but homes. And I think that's what's unique about this proposal, particularly from the county perspective, is really investing not just in homes, but in the support that families need to stay housed. One of the things that's in this proposal is proposed leverage with the Department of Human Services. One of the things that Department of Human Services knows is that a temporary assistance to needy families grant, $506 for a single mom with 2 kids, doesn't cover rent. And what we know on the housing side is that housing is important, but if people don't have an income or supports to continue to pay the housing, then the families and individuals risk being back on the streets. So I think what you see in this proposal is really an opportunity to leverage the capacity in the community through the nonprofit networks that exist, through the partnerships with the city and the county, and with other jurisdictions that bring more to the table to help families stay, hopefully stay housed past the investment in this particular proposal. And we can talk more about the Department of Human Services investment later, but I think that's a really unique piece that helps leverage the dollars that City Council is considering making in this investment. I think the other timely piece of this is Commissioner Salzman convened a stakeholder group to look at where would the priorities be for these dollars. And it was a great opportunity to have Home Forward, the city, the county, nonprofit partners sitting at the table saying housing is an important investment and how can we work together both this winter but also over time to create a strong governing structure between all the different partners that are looking at these dollars. So I applaud your leadership. Thank you for having the county at the table, and we look forward, hopefully with your support, in carrying out this investment this winter.
Thank you very much.
I would just like to thank Commissioner Wendt for participating in the stakeholder group, but more importantly, I think due to your previous role at the Department of Human Services at the state, is responsible for the $130,000 leverage that we are getting from the state. So thank you for that.
Nice having you as a partner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lightning, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. First of all, pertaining to the budget, when you do create a surplus, you're doing a good job. Buying down the debt, I think that's a reasonable thing to do. And again, pertaining to the $1.7 million toward housing, again, my emphasis is reducing homelessness, plain and simple. When we do that, I believe the money is being used properly. We need to keep dropping the numbers of the people down that are currently out on the sidewalks and getting them into some form of housing. Again, either shelters or permanent housing. So there needs to be a balance created, and I do agree on that. Now, another issue that I do have is really pertaining to the Water Bureau. And one of the concerns I have is that when I see funds in the past, and this is in the past, not reflecting upon currently, of funds being misappropriated, I have a concern about that, because we hear that, yes, we're just going to replace those funds in a certain account, and that's okay. But I have a real problem on that in understanding that we need to know why this is happening, why it happened, and who's responsible for that, because it's not right. It's taking money from other areas that the money should be going to, and it's also putting the Water Bureau in a position of being looked at, though this is not being managed properly, and this is what we're focusing on right now. And I want to have an understanding from my position that, you know, obviously these things are being corrected, but who is responsible in the past for this occurring? And I think the public needs to know that. One of the other issues I have pertaining to the budget, obviously it's been mentioned, is on the overtime. Overtime in general, across the board, I want to see more of a, maybe even an overtime oversight committee in certain areas that really study this information and look at it and get an understanding on, can we cut the costs? Is it better to have somebody working all these additional hours and making all this money? Or should we think about job creation and maybe having additional people working and also able to pay their car payments and their rent? So I want to look at that from that angle of job creation and public safety, and look at overtime from that angle. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Andy, welcome. Good morning.
Oh, thank you, Mayor Hales, members of council. I'm Andy Frazier. I have, to your excitement, probably I'm here to testify on two different things. If you would like, I can just do them both at this
point. Please, go ahead, dude.
This first one, I am representing the Small Business Advisory Council. I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for including SBAC in the recent task force on homelessness, and to discuss the potential opportunities we may have with this $1.7 million. As you all know, there isn't ever enough money for most things we're trying to do, and especially for an important issue like this. You know, the need is always greater than the resources we have. But I think our task force did a good job clearly identifying and taking a position to use this money to target, an impact where we can accomplish something now without increasing ongoing expenses too much into the future. We felt it was most productive to focus this funds in basically two areas. One that would result in the highest number of people the opportunity to get off the streets for at least a year, and assist areas of the city and county where hot spots have been popping up. First, the vulnerable homeless adults, those vulnerable men and women who are affected by mental illness, health illness, or violence. This would be implemented through a targeted geographic approach to deal with the citywide hotspots. We're thinking approximately 235 individuals would be able to move into housing with support services. Second, families experiencing homelessness, those families with children currently homeless in shelter or on shelter waiting lists, et cetera. This one was of particular interest to the task force. It was of great interest to me and others, and hopefully we can get some more county support if possible to get these families off the streets. As you know, getting the children into warm houses, secure living, being able to shower and bathe, getting them back to school and educated is the first thing that has to occur to break this cycle. Some of you may not know that you usually see me here as a small business representative, but my past includes working with the homeless and the mental those with mental illness. Spent a couple of years in crisis intervention and a lot of that work down in Salem. So I'm really coming at this with two hats on, the experiences I've had and the passion I have to helping this area of our city, as well as the benefits to our small business owners here in Portland. And I believe this task force was one of the steps needed to coordinate the many organizations together to really get a longer-term solution. And I think everyone in that room wants to see these types of meetings continue. Now, the second one, now I'm here representing the Small Business Alliance as chair of the Small Business Committee.
I might get Carla to go ahead and read that item so you can testify on the second item as well.
Sure.
Go ahead and read the second one, please.
Item 1059. Amend the small business license law to increase the owner's compensation deduction maximum for the 2014 tax year.
Please. Thank you. I am still Andy Frazier, small business owner, and now representing the Portland Business Alliance as the small business chair. And I really want to thank you for considering the proposal to provide some tax relief to the backbone of our local economy, which are small business owners. As you know, this has been one of those issues we've been talking about for a number of years, I think way back to 2007. As a small business owner, I can tell you that Portland is a great place to start a business and to grow an enterprise, but we have a problem that hinders small business vitality, and that is our local tax structure. In Portland and Multnomah County, we face a unique tax based on business income that is experienced nowhere else in the state. That means our cost structure is higher than our counterparts in Washington and Clackamas counties, and it puts us at a competitive disadvantage. For a long time, owners of small, locally owned businesses have been asking the city and county leaders for some relief for this tax. In 2007, the City Council made a commitment to increase the owner's compensation deduction to $125,000. Today marks a significant milestone in working toward achieving that goal. Small firms often have a harder time managing the cost and county business income taxes and regulations that add to their costs. Meanwhile, it's just a short drive to the city boundary where these taxes don't apply. We need to level the playing field so that we can encourage small business owners to grow and stay here. Most job growth in our area comes from small business, and providing tax relief will make it possible for small business owners to invest more in their businesses, potentially creating more homegrown jobs to fuel our local economy. We look forward to continuing to work with you to bring the dedication to the full $125,000 level over the next few years. Thank you again for your commitment to our community's small business and family-owned businesses. I strongly support this change.
Thank you very much. Thanks, all of you.
I'd just also like to thank Andy for participating in the stakeholder group to shape the homeless proposal.
Thank you.
Next, please.
The last person who signed up is Joe Walsh.
Okay. Joe, come on up.
Getting old.
Morning.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. Let me say straight out, Commissioner Thousman, your committee was a fraud. And the reason it was a fraud is you had no homeless people on your committee. You did the traditional crap. By going to stakeholders, I'm beginning to hate that word, and asking for their advice. And we have been doing that for 100 years. Hasn't worked yet. Ask the people that you say you represent what they need. I begged you before to do that, and you had 15 people at that table, and not one person knew what it was like to be cold at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Nobody at that table knows that. I don't know that. I've never been homeless. I've never had a cop kick me in the ribs at 3 o'clock in the morning when it was raining and telling me to move. But not telling me where. Because there's no place to go. You did a disservice. You're going to spend $1.7 million and it's going to be wasted. It's going to fail. And I'm telling you right now that I will be back and remind you every day. When you do these amendments on the budget, we have no way of knowing what the hell you're talking about. You either put them up on the screen or you give us copies so we know what you're talking about. These amendments are just a way of getting your way and rubber stamping stuff, and we sit there and say, what are they talking about? I was doing really good with you, Commissioner Fritz, because what you were asking for made sense. What you were asking for, Commissioner Ehrlich, made no sense to me at all, because I had no opportunity to read it. We are the public, and we have a right to know. It's called transparency. That's why you get a D. Minus, almost an F, in transparency. Because you do crap like that. And once again, your committee was a fraud. I told the county that. I will tell them again tomorrow that they participated in a fraud. Thank you.
Anyone else?
That's all who signed up. There was a request for someone else to speak who didn't sign up.
Okay. And did you have anyone else signed up on 1059?
I do. I have a Debbie Kitchen.
All right. Since we've already opened the hearing on that, let's
Sure. We have a panel on that.
Commissioner Fritz.
We have a structured panel.
Okay. So let's go ahead and take action on 1058, and then we'll reopen the hearing on 1059.
Roll call on 1058 as amended.
Yes.
Novick?
I think that everything we're doing today is good. I'm going to support it. I do have some concerns that I want to raise. One is that in the future, when we have one-time money, I think we need to dedicate some of it to emergency preparedness. I'd actually ask the budget office if he could take some of the one-time money and spend it on turning the Sears facility into a functional West Side Emergency Operations Center. And Andrew said that for technical reasons, that wouldn't qualify as a capital expense. But in future, I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that we are an earthquake country. We need a West Side Emergency Operations Center. The Portland building will not survive an earthquake intact. I think the price tag on that is at least $50 million, the seismic upgrade, and we're not going to be a very functioning city government without it. Much of our telecommunications infrastructure is housed in the Pittick building, which is not seismically sound. The price tag on that, I believe, is about $20 million, and which hopefully will be shared by other entities that have communications infrastructure there, too. But, I mean, that's my first point, is that in the future, when we have one-time money, I think we need to spend a chunk of it preparing for that, hopefully, one-time event of an earthquake. On the homeless appropriation, I mean, I think it's wonderful that we're spending a chunk of money on homeless services, but I do want to note that there will probably be a significant need for homeless services next year. And we were told by the city economist last week that ongoing general fund money, you know, increase from last year to next year could be as low as $2 million. And if we spent decided to spend the same $1.7 million in homeless services next year, that would be 85% of $2 million. So I think we need to make it clear that we're not committing today that this is going to be an ongoing appropriation. And finally, I want to note, I appreciate the fact that council is approving $230,000 for the Jasmine Block work for the streetcar, and this work is critically important to ensuring that the streetcar will become a more reliable and speedy method of transportation. Right now, you can along 10th and 11th, you can wait up to 14 minutes for the next streetcar. After we close the loop, we hope that we're going to get to a reliable every 7-minute service. If we don't do the work of the Jasmine Block, then that could add 1.5 to 3 minutes of delay for each trip. So the difference between waiting for a streetcar for 7 minutes and 8.5 or 10 is pretty significant. So I think it's a very important investment. Some questions have been raised in the media as to why we should invest any general fund into the streetcar. I think there's a good answer, which is that it's always been understood that the streetcar isn't just a transportation vehicle, it's also a method of attracting investment, which ultimately increases their revenues from both the business license tax and
the property tax. And we do see a lot of business activity, and we generate business license revenue from the Pearl District, which the streetcar was instrumental in creating. I do think it's fair to ask, though, when we will see increased property tax revenues from the River District. And I would note that the last numbers I saw were that if we shut down the River District as early as possible would be about 2018, and that would generate about $43 million a year in additional property taxes. The city general fund share of that would be about 20%, which would be about $8.5 million. And I think, and then the county, of course, would get a chunk as well. So I'm not saying that we should, you know, shut everything down as quickly as possible. 2018, that's the deadline. But I think that we should be moving towards that. And I think that would address some of the concerns that have been raised about why are we spending general fund in the streetcar. But more importantly, it would just generate more general fund revenue for everything that we need to do. Again, I think that these are important investments. I'm pleased to see, for example, investing in the cameras for the police. In Rialto, California, they've seen tremendous results from having body cameras on the police, and it's resulted in a dramatic reduction in the both use of force and complaints from the public about police conduct. And I think that's because when cameras are on people, both the police and the people they're interacting with sort of behave differently, and they know it's recorded. So, I mean, I think that all of these investments are important investments, but I just do want to recognize that although times are better, we still are operating overall in a constrained revenue environment. And I think that these are some of the issues I hope we address in the future. Please to vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to the mayor and my colleagues on the council for working with me on these amendments and on the budget as a whole for this budget monitoring process. Particularly appreciate the repayment of the Parks line of credit. This allows Parks to spend the entire $1 million that we have in our budget for major maintenance on major maintenance rather than spending $300,000 of it on debt repayment. So that's $1 million a year for major maintenance with a backlog of $400 million. And so that's certainly a step in the right direction, but by no means gets us where we need to be. Pleased to support the $1.7 million plus $200,000 in the allocation to housing. Particularly appreciate Amy True in Commissioner Saltzman's office and Tracy Manning and Sally Erickson in the Housing Bureau for explaining to me the purposes and for the group to come together, and also for committing that there will be houseless people on stakeholder committees in the future. And particularly thank Commissioner Fish, who continues to be my guiding light on housing issues, as he has been for the last 5 years. I'll make some comments on the business tax under the next item. This is still difficult times. We don't, as Commissioner Novick mentioned, we don't have much ongoing money next year in order to allocate to the many needs that have built up over the last 5 years of cuts. And so I encourage community members to participate in the budget committees, which are starting up in most bureaus right now. And there's still some very difficult choices to be made. But I need to end by commending the City Budget Office for your excellent analysis and your support to all five members of the council. It's obviously a structure that works well to be able to be accountable to all five of us, and for me to be able to get accurate information independent from the Budget Office, and I greatly appreciate your service. Aye.
Bish?
Well, first, I want to acknowledge that one of the reasons we have a surplus to carve up is because of shared sacrifice with the employees of the City of Portland. And I want to thank our most important resource, our employees, for working with us in a difficult budget to come up with some conservative estimates that have allowed us now, as we are slowly digging out from this recession, to have a modest surplus. And I want to thank the bureau directors who worked so diligently to identify tough cuts, and the mayor for setting up a 90-10 framework, a 10% cut package that every bureau, even utilities, had to come forward with. I think that, combined with an independent budget office, gave us a more transparent budget process. I also want to compliment the mayor and Commissioner Fritz for proposing that we retire debt first. And I want to thank Andrew Scott for revealing to us that in doing so, we actually generated ongoing money. One, in the case of the mayor's proposals, go to the city as a whole. But I compliment Commissioner Fritz because not only are we paying off debt in the Parks Bureau, but we're generating ongoing money within the Parks Bureau, which has tremendous unmet needs. And I think that's the right approach at this time. I'll make a couple of comments about some of the things in the budget. We are taking some general fund money to deal with streetcar alignment. That is not my preference, but I'm persuaded it's the right thing to do. But I'm also just want to put a marker down. There was a question about whether this amendment called the question of whether we would continue to honor a commitment we made last year to an education URA. I believe we made a commitment to the community, the housing community, Portland State, and others, that we would, in fact, proceed with that urban renewal district. I am satisfied that this particular budget item has no implication, pro or con, as to whether we will continue to honor that commitment, and so I will support it. I also appreciate the amendments that Commissioner Fritz brought today, particularly as to trees and elders in action. I was not prepared to say much on the homeless piece other than thank my friend and colleague Dan Saltzman for his leadership. But frankly, I think I've had enough. In this week in which a prominent business journal declared that the 10-year plan was a failure, and now on the left we hear the same language, except it's worse. It's the language of fraud. I think the record needs to be set straight. We are in the ninth year of an ambitious city-county plan to address homelessness among chronically homeless individuals. There was never a commitment to end homelessness any more than Johnson said we could actually end poverty or suffering or hunger. They are regrettably a function of the world in which we live in. But the 10-year plan was an organizing principle that I had nothing to do with, that a group of enlightened citizens worked tirelessly to craft, that said we can make a difference around chronically homeless individuals. And chronically homeless individuals are the people with the most barriers, the most suffering, and the most in need of our support. And even if you don't agree with that as a proposition, they're also the most expensive. So from just a pragmatic point of view, if you can stabilize those lives, there's more money to invest in domestic violence, there's more money to invest in families and children, and others, so there's a case to be made. So we are somewhere around the ninth year on this plan. So since this is the week in which we're declaring somewhere between a fraud and a failure, and since we have the royalty of the affordable housing and homeless community with us today, including two Spirit of Portland awardees, let's take a moment to reflect on what they have achieved. Over 11,000 people have moved from the streets to homes in the last 9 years. 11,000 people who otherwise would be living on our harsh streets in distress have been moved to homes. That's worth acknowledging. A new model was pioneered of bringing public and private together based around housing and services with the idea that we weren't investing in shortcuts and dead ends. We were investing in long-term solutions and ultimately self-sufficiency. A relatively new idea in this area. And we forged partnerships between the business community, the nonprofit community, the faith community, government, and philanthropy. And they linked arms and did something they've never done before. They actually worked together to solve a problem that was in our backyard. Because of the organizing principles in that 10-year plan, we leveraged every single tax dollar that was put into this. And we leveraged it because with every dollar of public investment was matched with more in private investment, and ultimately benefited our community. And here's something about that plan, which even I think a business person could embrace. It was based on the concept that if we invest upstream in prevention, we will save taxpayer dollars. Imagine a plan that is premised on that notion. And what do we mean by upstream investments? We mean short-term rent assistance that is used to keep people in their homes so families are not on the street, and to rapidly rehouse people once they fall into homelessness. And the question that will get called at a time like this is, if this plan was successful in any respect, then how do you account for the fact that there are still homeless people on our street? And it's a fair question. And in a society as wealthy and as powerful as ours, it's a question we should ask every day because it's a national disgrace that anyone has to live on our streets. So why are there people on our streets? Is it because the Portland City Council has failed Is it because the 10-year plan committee has failed? Or is it because there are some factors in our community that are beyond our control? Well, people will make their own judgment, but let's at least consider over the last 4 years some of the contributing factors. Let's start with the greatest recession in my lifetime.